previously on the Loyal Littles podcast.
So let's talk about Groundhog's Day. Now, you said you found new groundhogs this year?
Yeah, I found a few that I've never heard of before. Elsa the Hedgehog. I'm sorry. If you're a hedgehog, you're not a groundhog. So go away.
Must be a gopher. I mean, come on. Right.
I mean, well, okay, well, but Chuck, listen to this. There's Lucy the Lobster.
What?
Did you know about that?
No.
Yeah.
It's not Lobster Day. It's Groundhog Day.
I think she's up in Canada, but I also don't think we can go along with that because it's a lobster, not a groundhog.
What do
you
mean,
go away.
Of course we're not going along with that. First of all, she predicted 6 more weeks of winter. Screw that. Have fun with that, Canada. You want to follow a lobster and have 6 more weeks of winter? That's all you.
You go right ahead.
That's all you. Welcome back to the Loyal Littles podcast.
On the WTFC podcast network.
Hey, Roxy.
Hey, Chuck.
Hey, Littles. Roxy.
Chuck.
295th episode.
Oh my gosh, we are so close to 300.
It's sneaking up on us.
Uh-huh.
Chuck needs to, or excuse me, Lewis needs to do some work there to try to line up some guests coming up. Because we always like to do something semi-special for the big numbers.
Yeah.
I mean, they're all special in our hearts. But, you know, I mean, Lewis needs to get on the ball, basically. Real quick, want to start here because I love it when Littles do the work for us. Thank you, Steve Oswald, episode 2. He wrote in and said, is it a Cadbury Caramello that you're thinking of? Now, this was in reference to the Sky Bars we tried. And yes, it is. Thank you. Oz the Great and Flavorful from Emerald City Catering here in Milwaukee. Now, yes, here in Milwaukee, I'm just throwing this out there. This might be the last one because we're going to give you a little peek behind the curtain. Roxy's getting a little frustrated with the setup that we have here because it never seems to work for you. And I understand that. I totally get it.
And it's like, I don't change anything.
I know.
It works sometimes and then it doesn't work other
times.
And I don't understand it and I hate it. And life is hard sometimes.
Well, it's the computer. It's the computer world. You know, so finally I just said, you know what? Unplug everything, shut down, reboot, and let's just try again. And then it worked.
Maybe. Hopefully.
Well, we hope. Sorry this is so late in the day, Littles. We've been trying to figure out Tony's schedule. The last 2 weeks, he's dropped a Thursday episode. So we were going to record at some point later tonight or even tomorrow morning and then drop it tomorrow for a special Friday episode. And now all of a sudden, it's pretty late in the afternoon. He hasn't dropped yet. So we're assuming he's not doing a Thursday. He's going to go Monday, Wednesday, Friday, which I guess makes sense because it's Super Bowl weekend and all that stuff. But
sure.
It's hard to figure out sometimes. And so here we are. We're here with an episode. But we not want to start here and open the show with Roxy. Congratulations.
Thank you.
You passed your test.
Yeah. Well,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, it's 2024, so you know what? A passing grade is a passing grade. Now,
true.
You're such a nerd. I'm sorry, but you know, now you've taken it twice already, and
accidentally.
Okay, but so let's recap real quick. You get 3 chances to take this test, first of all, which I just think is hilarious in today's world. But
yeah,
that's where we are.
Yeah, you've got 3 chances to pass.
Okay,
and I passed the first time. But I was pretty bummed out about it.
With like a B minus. Like, it's not.
I mean, it wasn't good enough.
Nerd alert!
I mean, look, I can talk all day about how difficult this course was and how many brain cells I probably lost just trying to figure out how to pronounce some of these words.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Let's get right into that because you were furious because these words we've been bringing up on the last episodes were not even on the test.
Yeah. Gluconeogenesis was not even on it. And I was finally starting to understand it. So I was pissed. But also, too, it was one of those things. So, okay, I need to be fair with myself and note the fact that I've had this course for, I've had a year to complete this course. And I have been, of course, you know, not much has changed since high school.
Procrastination.
Yes. Now, listen, life happened. I started a new job. I was overwhelmed.
Oh, absolutely.
So things happen. However, what I will say is test number one that I took. Going into it, I actually felt pretty okay. I felt pretty okay given the circumstances. So I start to take it and I'm literally having these thoughts of, I've never seen these words in my entire life. I have not read anything, seen anything, pictured anything that remotely looks like these words. So there was a moment where I'm like, am I taking the right test? Is this, an error. I mean, I went through it and yes, I was, because there were a few questions on there that I knew, but honestly, I was guessing the whole time. And the fact that I got a passing grade on that is remarkable, but also I'm very frustrated.
Okay. But cut yourself some major slack. It wasn't just is a passing grade like a D?
A passing grade is a 75%.
Oh, whoa.
Yeah.
Okay. See, this I did not know. A 75.
Yeah.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, that's a C. Mm-hmm. That's passing. Yeah.
Okay, in my world, a passing was 65, which is a D.
Mm-hmm.
And 64 and below is an F. 65 to...
Oh, yeah, you know, I think that does ring a bell. So, yeah, I mean, the stakes were a little higher. We'll go with that.
All right. Mm-hmm. So you're going to a private school. I get it. Okay, that's...
Sure.
No, it's funny. I did one of my student teachings at a private school, and that's how it was. Like, a B-plus was like a 93 or something ridiculous like that. So it's... yeah, I get it. Okay, all right. So... You passed. That's the important part. You passed,
yeah.
And then you screwed up and you hit something. You hit the retake button by accident?
Yeah, it was pretty by accident. I was just messing around on the computer and I clicked on it, and then it took me to the start of a new test. And it wasn't like a page to describe, hey, you've got 90 minutes to complete it. You have to pass by 75% or above. No, I clicked on it and it took me right to beginning a new test. And I said, shoot, I have 90 minutes. What happens if I clicked out of it? I hit the back button just to see maybe it would pause it, stop it, cancel it. Because I hadn't even answered anything yet. And when I hit the back button, it took me back to the page where it shows like this test number one has been completed, but it no longer showed the highlighted in yellow, congratulations, you passed your final exam. So I started to freak out like, oh no, do I have to actually take another test? So then I click back into the test that I accidentally started and the time was running down. So it was 90 minutes. It was now at like an hour, 22 minutes. So I'm like, shoot. Oh no. What do I do? So what do? I try to take the second test.
Well, because you were afraid that the first one wasn't going to count now or something like that.
For some reason, yeah. I don't know. Anyway, again, littles, okay. I've had, this may sound really, really silly and stupid, and I probably could have just gotten away with not taking the test again, but I took it again. Luckily, I actually felt better about the questions that test number two was asking. Like, I have seen these before. So I felt better about that, but I actually still got the same amount wrong. But the other thing that I'm really frustrated about is that I can't even go back and see what I got wrong. So I can't even learn from my mistakes.
Right.
That's it.
The important thing is you passed twice. You passed it again. So that's where to start it. Congratulations. That's all I was trying to say was congratulations.
Thank you. But it's not what I wanted, but it's it's done, and I'm not going to take the third one because frankly, they don't care. So, okay, I don't care. I guess I'm certified.
Yeah,
so there we go.
And it is a little frustrating, like you said, because you do want to try to figure out like what you did wrong. Like, which questions did I get wrong?
There is
stuff like that.
There is a survey that I can fill out, and I might do that and say, hey, it would be really great if we can have access to just like the quizzes, the chapter quizzes. And I took chapter quiz after chapter quiz after chapter quiz, and I took multiple practice exams, and I felt actually pretty good, like I said. But anyway, it's done. It's over with. Moving on.
Yes, we're all very thankful for that. Now, the other thing, you got cupped. Now, do people know what that is? Because it's freaking gross is what it is. So all right, let's try to explain. I'm sure most people know what this is, but it's freaking gross. I'm just saying. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I had a physical therapy appointment. My back felt a little screwed up, so I went to see my PT, and she worked on me for a while, and then she said, okay, I'm actually going to perform cupping on you. And I got so excited because ever since I saw Michael Phelps in the Olympics years and years and years ago, I saw the spots and I just thought it was so cool. And I'm like, ooh, what is that? So I've been intrigued and curious about it for years. And finally, I got to have the treatment done on me, and it was so cool. So now I have spots on my back, and some are more predominant than others. And I think that's like the areas that were most troublesome to
me. But let's call it what it, first of all, littles, forgive her. She does not know who she speaks of. Okay. Michael Phelps is not a name we like to say too often, but you have hickeys on your back. That's what they are. They're hickeys, right?
Pretty much. Okay. Pretty much.
All right.
Yeah.
Littles, she sends me these pictures, okay, of the what would you say, in the middle of it, I guess?
Yeah, the cups were on.
You looked like a freaking, I don't know what,
alien.
Yeah, you had these like huge mounds coming out of your back.
Yep.
And it just seemed like that can't be good.
It's like a suction. Yeah, it's pulling out all the bad
stuff. There's suction and then there's this. This was like a mound of flesh in each one. And you had like five or six on your back at the same time.
I had eight.
Eight?
I had eight. Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. It just was gross. I was like, oh, my God. I mean, maybe it feels great. I've never done it. I don't know that I want to do it now.
No, it did feel great. It was a little strange because you could feel the skin like pulling.
Sure,
like
you could feel it
happening. But honestly, I felt like I was turning into the Incredible Hulk. Like everything, my whole back was like expanding and flying. It was so cool. And then when she took them off, I felt so much better than I did before I had them on. Hmm. So it works.
Like even just one, I think, would feel very weird. But then to have eight at the same time, and how it's not just that it's hard to explain littles. I don't know that we could post this photo. I guess we could. But it's how much flesh was in this cup.
Oh, yeah.
Like it had to be at least like 3 or 4 inches, I felt like.
No, it was not that much.
That's what the picture, maybe the picture made it look worse than it was.
I mean, the circumference was maybe about 2.5, 3 inches.
Yeah.
But then what's actually the skin that's like sucking up into the cup is probably no deeper than an inch.
Really?
Really.
Okay. This
really?
Might be a what say you littles. We might post this photo because I'm sorry. It looked horrible. It looked
really
bad.
They're looking better today.
Okay, sure, fair enough.
They're Littles, fading.
Who's done cupping? Gross. I mean, I'm glad you're feeling better. That's the important part,
I guess.
I feel
so much better, yes.
But now you keep sending me these pictures of your back, and I'm like, ugh. You've got like these eight hickeys on your back. It's just like, ugh.
I do.
Anyway, glad you're feeling better.
Thanks.
I just have, before we get to the Meet the Littles guest, a minor rant, but can someone help me figure out milk?
Milk?
Just regular milk. Who can help me figure this out? Oh, yeah, so I went shopping a couple days ago, and I made sure, you know, you're always looking for the expiration date. You're trying to get, like, the furthest one out, blah, blah, blah. So is it a thing where, and I'm being serious, I'm a dope, we know that, but is it when air gets into it, it immediately changes the whole aspect of the milk? Is that, so, like, when you open it? Because all I know is this expiration date said 2/14, okay? Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, that's another week away. So, you know, when I bought it like on the 6th, maybe the 5th.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, oh, this is great because I do not use a lot of milk, Littles. The only thing I pretty much use milk for is my cereal, which I don't even drink the milk. I just have it in there. I think it's a mental thing. Like I need milk in the cereal. Well, and then it's for some cooking things. Okay. Uh-huh. But other than that, don't use milk. So it usually, and I like real milk. I like just regular milk. You like the 2%. So it's always that thing too. It's like the crunchy smooth thing. Okay. But.
Okay.
Here's the thing. So I opened the milk, had one bowl of cereal on the day I bought it, which was like the 5th, maybe the 6th. Because then it's, like I said, it says expire, you know, and actually it says sell by 7/14.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Doesn't even say expires by 7. It says sell by. Okay.
Yeah.
Went to use the milk yesterday, the 7th.
Gross.
I almost threw up when I smelled it. What the? I'm sorry. Like, what the hell? How does this work? Like the only thing I can think of is like when the air hits it, when you initially open it, it changes the whole vibe of what's going on inside because
that would be my guess.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And I'm so angry. It almost makes me like I want to take it back. I'm like, I got one helping, not even, you know, it's not even much. It's just a bowl of cereal and that's it. Now I had to throw it out. Even though
what
it says,
what size did you get?
I got like a 1/2 gallon because that's all they really had.
Oh,
you know, because one of those, like, you know, the ones that you just walk around and drink, those little bottles, whatever it's quart, whatever those are. I mean, those, it's not big enough,
right,
you know, for what I want it. But now I'm going to start, I think, buying individual quarts. But then, of course, it's more expensive. It's annoying. That's all. I just don't get milk. So I'm wondering, like, if I had opened it today, would it have smelled just as bad as it did yesterday when I went to reuse it? You know what I'm saying? Like, then I feel like I could take it back and be like, yo, look, it's a full container. It stinks. And it sells by next week. So
you don't got milk.
Exactly. I swear I didn't set her up for that, Littles, but yeah, there it is. Let's get out of here, Roxy. We have a great Meet the Littles guest again. It's really great and a fun time. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with
Meet the Littles.
Hi, this is the great Zucchini from Bethesda, Maryland. And you're listening to the Loyal Littles Podcast on the WTFC Podcast Network.
We seem to have so much in common as we came into each other's lives.
Kale Surprise. Talking movies over curry and ramen. You're not the first one to arrive. I apologize. But the ones I ignore are like you from before. They don't ask where I am anymore. I'll abandon you.
We are being played in this episode by good friends of the podcast, Norwegian Soft Kitten. And this song is called To New Endings. If you like what you hear, don't go anywhere, because we've got one of the band members right here, right now, to tell us all about it. Please welcome to the podcast, Glenn Burgetz. Hey, Glenn, how's it going?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me on, Chuck and Roxy.
Oh, this is
good. Oh, it's our pleasure.
Our pleasure. No, I was making fun of Roxy off air a little bit, saying how I've had the pleasure of meeting Glenn in person. You came out to have coffee with me when we were in Indiana. That was Fort Wayne, right?
That's correct. Yeah, we met at a Tim Hortons. We chatted for a couple hours, then I had to leave to go to school.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. So I know a lot about you, but the littles don't, and that's why we're here. So you know what we do. Let's take it way back. Take a second. Introduce yourself to all the loyal littles out there.
All right. Well, I'm Glenn Burgetz. I'm the guitarist singer for the band Norwegian Soft Kitten. I'm originally from New Jersey, born in Atlantic City, spent my first few years in southern New Jersey in the Egg Harbor, Cologne area, spent much of my life in Indiana, lived in Denver for 10 years, miss it a whole lot. I'm back in Indiana and dealing with that. And thankfully, I had a chance to meet you, Chuck, when you were strolling through town.
Right. Good old Fort Wayne, Indiana. All right, so kind of all over. When did you leave Jersey and all that stuff?
Oh, I was only a little wee beastie when we left New Jersey, and we moved to Indiana. So I spent most of my formative years in Indiana, high school, some of my college. And then I was a substitute teacher for 3 years because I got my initial degree in history, and then I picked up the secondary education job. And if any of you are ever thinking of being a substitute teacher, don't do it. Worst job ever.
Uh-huh.
And so I ended up getting a master's degree, became a golf pro for a while, had a couple of golf instructional books published that I co-wrote with my good buddy Alan Moyer, who's still a PGA pro. And after a while, I decided to move to Denver. I lived out there for quite a while. That's when I started making films, was in Denver. That's where I met my bandmate, Alan Green of Norwegian Soft Kitten, and he and I started playing some music together. We made some films together. And then when they legalized marijuana in Colorado, that was the end of me in Colorado, because suddenly I went from paying $400 a month for a really nice apartment to, you know, apartments being $1,500 a month. And I was an adjunct professor. And people were just streaming into Denver. They said at the time about 10,000 new residents a month, and suddenly rents skyrocketed. And as an adjunct professor, I could no longer afford to live in Denver. So I moved back here to Indiana, where I had a house.
Wow. Okay. Well, first of all, let's go back. I have so much in just that little bit. Let's start here. Roxy, if you knew what I'm thinking right now, you'd probably want to leave me, because Denver and Seattle were two of the main places of the bigger cities. I know I've said on the podcast before, believe it or not, Madison and State College, Pennsylvania were two of my favorite stops on tours. But Denver, downtown, I want to say around 2005, 2006, I actually got a real estate agent, looked at apartments. I almost bought a loft apartment right on, is it 16th Street there? That's the main strip, mm-hmm. right? Okay. Yeah. And, but it was like $175,000. I was like, that's ridiculous. I'm not, you know, because I'm probably never going to be there. Now, based on what you just said, and I've heard other people say this about Denver as well, I could have probably sold that for almost $1 million. That's what it sounds like. So that's crazy. Wish I would have invested in some real estate.
Yeah, it's pandemonium out there now. Actually, I was in the same apartment for 5.5 years. I paid $400 a month with cable included. They never raised my rent. And I looked a short while ago, the building I was in, because it was a smaller building, only had 12 units. It's now been turned into condos. And according to Zillow, that condo, it's not for sale, but the estimated list price would be $440,000 for the little tiny $400 a month apartment I had for 5.5 years.
Wow. That's a shame, because it's such a nice area, too. Now, thank you for not burying the lead, but this is why we do this, Roxy. And this is fun for me. Now, as I already dropped, I've met Glenn in person. Glenn, did you ever mention anything about golf? Because I don't think you did. And you're saying you were a golf pro? Like what?
Yeah, I wasn't a touring pro, but I gave lessons. I ran an indoor golf facility for a number of years. And I don't really golf much anymore. I still golf in the winters with my buddy Alan. They have a winter indoor simulator league. And we both just put up nice rounds on Tuesday in this week's round. But yeah, I pretty much only golf indoors anymore. I don't golf outdoors.
Oh, interesting.
Really? Now, what exactly is that? The ones where you like stand in front of the net with the video screen? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, you use regular clubs, regular golf ball and all, and it's got the sophisticated tracking system and play different courses. It projects the shot onto the screen. And yeah, it's much better to play 18 holes that way in, you know, an hour and 20 minutes rather than the 5 hours it takes outside.
Right. Now, I mean, forgive me because I've never done that. I've seen those kind of on videos and stuff like that. But so essentially, you're just, it's almost like just going to an indoor driving range for an hour, right?
Kind of, you know, like that. I hit one into the desert on Tuesday and was right behind a cactus. And I swung, hit the cactus and shot right back at me. I had my next shot was even farther from the hole than the one previously. So, yeah, it does, some things come into play that are a little different than, yeah, just hitting on a driving range.
And so, forgive my dopiness. Now, would you actually use a sand wedge there? Or what do you use?
Yeah, I mean, we just hit off a mat. So that's one of the nice things. Okay. Because, we always have a good lie. But, yeah, I go through all my clubs depending on distance and going uphill, downhill, all that stuff. So it's fairly realistic. There are some things that make scoring a little easier. The putting is and chipping are really hard to get used to.
Well, that's what I was thinking.
Because, chipping off the green says I'm 67 feet away. I mean, when you're out on a golf course, you don't think, oh, I'm 67 feet away. I'm going to hit it 67. You just look at it and hit it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so there are pros and cons, but Alan and I always have a good time each week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and you kind of took the words out of my mouth. That was good. But, well, first of all, let's go back. See, it's not like that for Chuck, because that's the weakest part of my game is the approach shot, the chipping. A lot of times if I'm right off the green, I will not use a pitching wedge. I will use like a 5-iron or something just because I can gauge the strength of the swing. And I don't know why, I just chip better onto the green with like a 5-iron. It's the dumbest thing I know. But the putting, now, is there a separate mat for that?
No, it's the same mat. It's set up that anything inside of 8 feet is a gimme.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
But the other thing is, if I have a 50-foot putt, again, out on a golf course, I don't think this is a 50-footer. You just kind of look at it, read the terrain, and hit it. And so it's, I guess, not quite as intuitive inside. It's a little more analytical playing inside.
Right.
So it's just different. Either way.
That's hilarious, though. Anything inside 8 feet. I mean, that's the game I need to play because that's not a gimme for Chuck on the actual course.
Just a little side note there. You know, if I'm outside and I have a 20-foot putt, I'm not going to run it 18 feet past the hole, but that's pretty common with indoor putting. So, yeah, the 8 feet kind of,
gotcha.
8-foot gimme kind of makes up.
Yeah, winter rules, as they say, winter rules. So now let's go back because you have this other various history and teaching and all this stuff. Now, what did you go to college for?
As an undergrad, I was a history major because, back when I went to college, I was fool enough to believe, as my advisor told me, everyone loves a history major. You can get a job anywhere with a history degree. And it didn't quite turn out that way. So I went back and student taught, picked up the education classes. So I was a licensed school teacher for a while. And I did the substitute teaching, coached high school sports and middle school sports for 3 years. Realized I was kind of losing my mind dealing with students as a substitute teacher on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. So then I started writing novels, started grad school, kind of did a lot of nothing for about 6 years or so. Did shine shoes for a while at a golf course in the locker room. So that was a little fun year, shining shoes. And eventually started getting into the golf industry more. I worked as the golf pro for 4 years, I guess. And by then I was ready for higher education. So that's when I started working as an adjunct professor at the university level.
Wow.
Nice.
Okay. I don't know if I'm revealing anything or not, Roxy. I can't remember after almost 300 episodes here. But Chuck did the substitute teaching thing at one point. When I got off my first tour, I had like 2 months of downtime and I was still living at home. This is like right after I got out of college and decided to go back to my alma mater to start substitute teaching. And you're not wrong, sir. You're not wrong, because it's not, you know, also because when you actually get to substitute for the classes that you majored in, you know what I mean? And let's not forget, if this is your alma mater, most likely the teachers you had in high school, even maybe even elementary school, are still there. So they know you.
Right. Yep.
And so they're like, oh, Chuck's coming in to substitute my music class. We can actually do something. We don't have to just, you know, most times you substitute, it's like, hey, let's watch a movie or, you know, whatever. Study hall, whatever, you know. But when they know what you're talking about, they're like, oh, you can actually teach my lesson plan, you know, kind of thing. And the kids, when they walk in and they see someone they don't know, they think, oh, study hall. So when you try to then say, oh, sorry, no, we're actually going to do some work today. They're like, oh, we're sorry, we're not going to do some work today. So it's
you have to like play space. It's like you got to show them who's boss. Now the old saying of you go to jail, you got to punch out the biggest person so that they know that not with you. Like,
I love that. That's the first place Roxy went for the, you know, comparison. You know,
jail?
I love that. Jail, right, with the kids. Yeah. No, but you could tell Roxy's never substitute taught because it's not the easiest.
My foremost goal each day was to not get knifed. That was priority one. Priority two was to make sure no student got knifed. And anything beyond that was just gravy.
Okay, well, thank goodness I was in the middle of nowhere and it was the 90s. So I wasn't so worried about that. You know, we didn't have like metal detectors and all that stuff back then. It was a nightmare. It really was. The best ones, honestly, were the ones where I got called for like a math or a science teacher where they did not expect you. You're babysitting. That's all you're doing. You know, you hand out some worksheets. They finish it. If they finish early, they can do other work, blah, blah, blah. And you're just kind of like, what do they say that when the quarterback is just kind of like guiding the game? They're not really, they don't have to make any plays. They just don't have to lose the game. You know, it was kind of like that situation, I felt like. And what do you teach now?
I teach English classes. Right. I teach composition classes. I've taught British literature, American literature. I've taught horror literature, which was a lot of fun. I've taught some film classes as well.
Yep.
But mostly writing classes.
Okay.
Nice.
All right. Well, listen, we're going to get all into that because we know you've written books. We've got one of your books. You were nice enough to send us one of your books. We've got movies to talk about. We know that. So let's come back and do all that. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with
Meet the Littles.
This is the Loyal Littles Podcast with Chuck and Roxy.
Turn around. Every single day I listen to Mr. Tony and I dig his old guy sound.
Turn around.
He tells a funny story and the Littles start working on the lyrics for a mailbag jingle.
Watching ball.
Last year he lost a red one, but thank God the refugee Safeway had a small raking device.
Turn around.
A jingle bat, an auction for a round of golf with you and your f***ing kid that Tony will hate.
Turn around, little.
Every single day they write a song.
Turn around.
He's still orange and bald. Nothing I can do. The Littles love Tony a lot. Once upon a time, I think that I had a life. Now I'm writing jingles. Oh, God. Nothing I can say. My life. life now stinks like a lot.
Littles, that's a collaboration between John Quinn from Dublin, Ireland. We need to get him a Chuck and Roxy number, and performed by Michelle Negrelli. Welcome back to the Loyal Littles podcast. And Roxy, we're lucky enough to have Glenn Burgetz here with us from Norwegian Soft Kitten. Now, we haven't even gotten to that yet. I mean, you touched upon it. You said you met your bandmate and stuff. Why don't we go there first, and then we'll get into your movies and your books and everything else we have to get into. Where did Norwegian Soft Kitten come from? First of all, one of the best names we've ever had. It's right up there with Hot Pink Hangover for us. I got to be honest.
It's so great.
We love the name.
Well, you know, when Alan and I got together, we initially met when I started making films in Denver, and I had posted on Craigslist looking for cast and crew. I had no idea what I was doing. I'd never made a film before, but I thought, well, how hard can this be? I'll just get some people who know what they're doing, and we'll make a film. So I auditioned potential cast members, and then I had to get some crew members, and Alan was one of the people who came in, and I thought Alan seemed really talented, nice enough guy and all. So the first film we ever made was a 20-some minute short film called Bad Movies, Good Showers, and Civil Engineers. And Alan and I got to know each other more, doing some more film stuff. And we worked on the short film Guernica Still Burning, which is airing this month every Friday at 8 p.m. on Altoona TV Channel 14, if you live in the Altoona, Pennsylvania area. And so we worked on Guernica Still Burning together, and we're becoming friends. And so then one day, we decided we'd go to an Indian buffet together. And so Alan came to my apartment. This is in Denver. He picks me up and all. And I get in the car. He's got some drumsticks sitting there on the floor of the front seat. I'm like, dude, you play the drums? He's like, yeah, I play the drums. I'm like, dude, I play the guitar. He's like, really? I'm like, we should form a band. He's like, whatever. Everyone says they're going to form a band, then they never do anything. I'm like, no, trust me. We'll play songs. We'll figure things out. And so that was when Norwegian Soft Kitten formed, okay, over some Indian food. And so we eventually started performing together. We had to come up with a name. And Alan had been in a band called Toothpaste when he was in college. So he'd always wanted to be in a band again. And, you know, this is, I don't know, a dozen years after he's out of college or so. And so he'd been keeping a list of potential band names for years. And so he's like, well, I'll email you my list of potential band names. See if you like any of them. And he sends me this list. There's like 8,000 band names on there. I'm like, good gravy, Alan. So I start scrolling through these things. I'm going, ooh, that one's kind of cool. Okay, I like that one. Yeah, yeah. The very last one on the list was Norwegian Soft Kitten. Hit reply, Alan, we're Norwegian Soft Kitten. We got to be Norwegian Soft Kitten. That's how we became Norwegian Soft Kitten. Wow.
Okay, so do you remember any of the, like, possibilities? Like, did you have, like, a top three that you, like, the two that you neglected?
I don't remember them because Alan's really good with wordplay. I do remember one of the band names I had thrown out there pretty early on was Jerry Falwell and Other Pedophiles. But within about 3 seconds, we realized that would be a terrible right. band name.
Yeah.
And so I'm really glad we went with Norwegian Soft Kitten rather than that.
Okay. So did he say where he came up with that, though? Like, why wasn't it Norwegian Soft Puppy?
You know, I don't know. He just said the list was years in the making, okay. And just any time a combination of words would pop into his head, he'd add it to the list as a potential band name, and there you go.
All right.
I had been in bands earlier, many years earlier, like in high school. My brother Brian, and he has the Brian Burgetz Band in Tucson, Arizona, and they play live all the time. My brother Brian's like 8,000 times better guitarist than I am. And he's a couple years older than me. So like in high school, it was me and Brian. I didn't know how to play an instrument, so I had to sing. And then we had a drummer, Steve Burkholder. So we came up with the name Please Respond for that. And that was from a Budweiser commercial. We were jamming out one day, as teenagers do, and we were taking a break and watching some MTV. And a Budweiser commercial came on, and it was something with a riverboat or something, or barge, and the guy's on the walkie-talkie or something, and he calls out something, and he says, Please Respond. I'm like, hey, that's a cool band name. So we were Please Respond. And then later, the band kind of, you know, we just went our different ways. We're graduating high school and stuff like that. But then Brian and I recorded a couple things together, and we used the band name Fruit Bowl for that. That's directly stolen from a South Park episode and Butters. And we had Fruit Bowl and all. And so now that I got together, it's like, yeah, I don't know. I've been in Please Respond. I've been in Fruit Bowl. What ideas you got? I'm pretty much spent on band name ideas at this point.
Right. No, I went through that. I've talked about that on the podcast. My idea was Youngblood. Yeah. They didn't like it. I was really pushing for The What. I thought that was a great, clever name. But no, never took them on. Mm-hmm. All right, let's get into now the movies a little bit more. Because last time you know, when we met, you kind of sent me some links to Die Hard. Is that or what? What's the name of that one?
To Die Is Hard.
To Die Is Hard. That's right. So let's talk about that real quick, because that obviously has a huge following with the littles, you know, especially around the holidays. But how did that all start?
Well, when Alan and I were working together on some of the shorter films, we also did, and Alan wasn't part of this at first, but me and my buddy Jeff McBride, who's a little from Denver, he's the one who got me listening to Tony's podcast.
Who you need to tell to eat it
and another
right now,
guy,
right?
Oh, yeah, eat it, bake. And so Jeff and I, we got together with another guy. We thought we'd do a sketch comedy TV show. And so it was kind of a big production, took us a while. It brought in more cast members than I normally worked with. And we were having trouble finding someone to edit it. So Alan eventually came on to edit it. And one of the sketches was called The Feel Good Thrill Ride of the Year. It was a trailer for a fictitious film. And Alan, when he was working on it, he gave me a call the one day. He's like, this Feel Good Thrill Ride thing, this one where you're like a professor and you're acting super macho, I think that would be a great character for a future film. He said, you need to write that script. And I said, well, okay. So for like, I don't know, that was like a Thursday, and through the weekend, I just kept jotting down notes. What would I want him to do? And, you know, I expanded on the character. And then I took like another week to write the script. And I shared it with Alan. He's like, oh, my gosh, we got to shoot this film. And so that was, I don't know, June, something like that. And by December, we had the finished edit in place. I just put together cast members, because by then I'd made enough short films and things like that. And we'd done a couple features that weren't finished edited yet at that point. So I knew quite a few people in the Denver area in the film scene. So put the cast and crew together quickly. Alan shot it. And he edited it super quickly, and we loved it right off the bat. And we ended up winning a Golden Ace Award from the Las Vegas International Film Festival for it. So that's where Alan and I traveled together there. The venue for that was the theater Elvis Presley performed at.
Wow.
And at the end, I had to go on stage and do the little acceptance speech. It's like, I am standing on the same stage right. Elvis Presley used to stand on. Look, this is bloody cool.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's how To Die Is Hard came about. It quickly got a decent following. I got it into, I don't know, like 8 or 9 theaters across the U.S., but it actually seems to be more popular now, 12, 13 years on, than it was when we first released it.
Well, it seems like it would be one of these, like, cult classic type situations.
Yeah, and it's been fun that this year was the first year it kind of became a Christmas film, I guess, as an homage to Die Hard, because it's largely lampooning Die Hard, that we threw in a bunch of other things as well.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so the one TV station in Ohio, YSCA TV5, I think it was, just outside of Dayton. They showed it as their last film Christmas Eve, and for 24 hours straight Christmas Day, and a whole other handful of TV stations either showed it Christmas Eve or Christmas Day. And so, yeah, that was a lot of fun, becoming a bit of a Christmas film.
Yeah. And I just saw a post recently. Now, something's going to be airing in the New York City area, right?
Yes, I only found that out yesterday morning, I guess it was, WOM TV in New York City, and we got to work out the details and all. Certainly no dates have been set for it to air. So that's really exciting, because the only big market been airing in is Chabot TV, which is an Emmy award-winning small station in the San Francisco Bay Area. Mm-hmm. And so most of the places it's been airing have been in cities, you know, like the size of Dayton and things like that,
right,
Altoona,
right,
Pennsylvania, which is super cool. But yeah, to now have it in New York, oh man, the cash is going to be going in now.
He's like retiring now. All right, well, we got to get through all this. So now let's talk about the writing. So obviously you were an English major, all that stuff you said, but when did you start writing your books and stuff?
The first thing I ever wrote was the summer between my junior and senior years of college, and it was a novella, never published. When I was in my 20s, I wrote 3 novels, all of them terrible. Tried to get them published. I can understand now why. About 10 years ago, I found them, like, oh, let me start reading these. I got like 5 pages into them. I'm like, oh gosh, I cannot read another word of this crap. So I can understand why those weren't published. Ended up getting some short stories published and all. And eventually I started writing novels. I went to screenplays, feature films initially, because that like 100-page format seemed good for me. That I always felt with short stories, I didn't have quite enough space to expand on the characters and the plot like I wanted to. But a novel, I wasn't a good enough writer yet to fill up an entire novel.
Sure.
So eventually, after I'd written, because gosh, we've made 12 feature films. I have, I think it's 16 other scripts I've written that we haven't put into production because they would cost too much money. So I'm just occasionally try to sell one of those scripts.
Yeah.
But eventually, like, hey, I can try a novel here. I can go back to trying to write a novel. And so the first three novels I wrote were on the shorter side, but I really liked them, especially the last two, Fading to Black and Waiting for Evening to Come. And my most recent novel that I finished, I'm trying to find an agent for it, trying to get a bigger publishing company, because it's been a smaller publishing company's brought out my first three novels. But this one is much, much longer than my last two novels combined. It's called Laureen's Salon, and it's 1958, small town in Mississippi. And I write from the perspective of a 38-year-old woman who has four sons and a fat husband.
Okay.
So, yeah, as a history major, it was fun because, you know, it's fiction, but still want to be accurate as much as possible.
Sure,
you know, you can
sure.
certainly take liberties with fiction. So it was a lot of fun to research pop culture and politics and society back in the late 50s and all. And it was fun to create the main character. She's a little out of place in the Deep South. She's a little more open-minded maybe than some other people. And so my earlier novels were more serious. This one, it feels like maybe a little of my love of Kurt Vonnegut crept into the manuscript a little bit. So, you know, the agents I've heard back from, it's so long. A couple of them say, well, I like this, but it's just so long. It's hard to sell a novel
yeah.
that's this long.
Gotcha.
And I hate the thought of editing stuff out because I've worked on it for a couple years,
yeah.
you know. But, yeah, I don't know. At some point, I may have to edit some of it out.
Yeah. All right, well, and then real quick, the reason we're all here, Tony Kornheiser. How'd you become a little?
You know, growing up in Fort Wayne, Indiana, the Sunday Morning Journal Gazette always had a big sports page, which the rest of the week, you know, was just a couple pages. But every Sunday morning, they had syndicated columns, and I read them all the time. And so Kornheiser was there, Dan Jenkins, Blackie Sherrod, all these, you know, great writers from the 60s, 70s, into the 80s. So I do not remember a time in my life where I don't know who Tony Kornheiser was, because at like 7 years old, I was reading
wow.
his syndicated column most Sundays.
Oh, that's amazing.
And yeah, and I see him on the sports reporters or PTI and stuff over the years. I stopped watching ESPN by and large, other than for college football and college basketball after a while. So I kind of lost touch there. And then, yeah, Jeff McBride a few years ago, he's like, dude, you got to listen to Tony's podcast. I listen to it all the time because he's got satellite radio in his car. So he listened to it going to and from work
sure.
and all. And yeah, I started listening, got to reacquaint myself with Tony, got to know Nigel a bit. And it's been glorious ever since.
Yeah.
And now you have a Chuck and Roxy number.
Absolutely. Full circle. All right. Well, speaking of Chuck and Roxy, let's get to some fun, dumb questions, Roxy. What do you got?
Okay. If you could have dinner with anyone from history, who would it be?
Oh, I'm going with Vonnegut. I did my master's thesis on some of Vonnegut's novels. He's from Indiana here. I've seen him speak. I saw him speak before he died, you know, in lectures and all. And from people I've talked to who have actually met him in person, spent some time with him, they said he's really dark, that his novels are really funny. Of course, it's dark humor. And so it seems like Vonnegut would be fabulous to spend a couple hours with over a meal and just pick his brain a wee bit.
Excellent.
Nice.
All right. How about who's your celebrity crush?
I don't know if I should say the name. There is a jazz singer from Toronto with the most glorious voice I've ever heard in my life. So, yeah, I guess I should say her name for crying out loud. Her name's Katja Benar, and she is a jazz singer. She gets played on a lot of the same stations Norwegian Soft Kitten gets played on. And oh, my gosh, yes, her voice is insane. Total crush.
Like butter, as
nice.
We say.
All right. What accomplishment are you most proud of?
It would have to be the time when I went with Jeff McBride, Eat It Bake, and we went to a Cici's Pizza Buffet. And even though I'm not a real big guy, I can eat a lot. And we decided to see how many pieces of pizza I could eat that day. And I finally bonked at 54 slices of pizza.
Wow.
In one day?
Well, it sounds like
I
one sitting.
I did not move for the next couple of days. I was like one of those pythons that swallowed like a feral pig and just has to lay there for days and days as it's digesting it. But it was worth it.
Wait, did you just say python as in pizza python? See what I did there?
Oh!
I'm not sure you meant to do that, but that's what I heard. So.
Wow!
All right. What's a special hidden talent you have that no one else knows about? Now, that's a tough one because you've given us so many.
Well, you know, I would say, and it's not that no one knows about it, but a few do. Now the littles know. I can eat more at a buffet than probably anyone you know, unless you know a professional eater. If you take me to an Indian buffet, like when Alan and I formed Norwegian Soft Kitten together, I will throw down, I don't know, 25,000 calories in one sitting. Because if I'm at
Holy
a buffet,
okay.
I'm going to eat till I'm full.
Well, watch out. I was going to say watch out, Joey Chestnut, but I think more, maybe we're in line with watch out Ritz, you know?
Yeah,
maybe,
with the falafel.
Yeah, maybe we need a falafel eating contest here in New York City sometime, and Ritz can defend his title against Glenn
right?
here.
I like falafel.
All right.
There you go.
All right. Roxy, real quick, some rapid fire.
Okay, Coke or Pepsi?
Fresca.
Fresca, love it. Love it. Especially nice. With me doing Xanadu out here. Awesome. Crunchy or smooth peanut butter?
Crunchy.
Star Wars or Star Trek?
Spaceballs.
Oh, yes.
Excellent.
1,000 times yes.
Pancakes or waffles?
Pancakes, at least 2.5 feet high, the stack of them.
Okay. Do you put anything on the pancakes? Anything on the pancakes, do I dare ask?
Oh, I'll put just about anything on pancakes. I have syrup, butter, jelly, peanut butter. I don't care. I'll throw peanut butter on it. It's a pancake.
Man.
You can put anything
right.
on it.
I might have to give in on this, Roxy. I don't know. We'll see. But...
Oh, my gosh.
All right. Last one. Uranus jokes, not funny or never not funny?
Always funny.
Excellent. All right. Yep. Well, Glenn, can't thank you enough for entertaining us and coming on to Meet the Littles. This has been great. Now, we might have to have a third segment to give you a chance to plug everything, but go ahead. Let's see what you got. Plug your book, plug your albums, whatever you got.
All right. If you want to listen to Norwegian Soft Kitten, we're on Spotify, iTunes, Bandcamp, all that stuff, YouTube. You can listen to us on those platforms. When it comes to films, a number of our films are now on Tubi TV, T-U-B-I-TV.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, To Die Is Hard is our most notable one that's on Tubi TV. Totally free to watch. You don't have to enter in email addresses or anything like that. No pay, no fees. As far as the books, all my novels are on Amazon. And the golf instructional books are on Amazon. I had a book published on independent filmmaking, small budget independent filmmaking. All those are on Amazon. Just, I guess, somewhere close to spelling my name correctly, and they should pop up. And if anyone's interested, you know, they're Norwegian Soft Kitten pages, and I have individual pages on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. You can always contact me or the band through
all
any
right.
of those social media platforms.
Okay. Well, we'll make sure we put all that in the show notes, including hopefully getting the spelling right so they can find you easily. And yeah. thanks again, and as an homage to the big show, we'll get you out of here on this.
Over or under?
I'm at a point in my life where if I'm ever at your house and I use the facilities and you are under, I'm going to Chuck Todd that mother.
All right. Excellent. Watch out, Roxy's mom. That's all I'm going to say. So, all right, Glenn, thank you again so much for taking the time to come meet the Littles. We really appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
All right, all you loyal listeners.
We'll be right back.
This is Dave Patton. You're listening to the Loyal Littles podcast on the WTFC Podcast Network. And if you think the TK show stinks, wait till you hear this.
Welcome back to the Loyal Littles podcast, and thank you, Glenn, for coming on to Meet the Littles. Always fun to get to meet someone, people that send in their music.
Yeah.
I don't know why. It's always a lot of fun. Got to do that with Hot Pink Hangover, and now we get to do it with Norwegian Soft Kitten. Just very interesting, especially for me being a musician. I love getting to do those kind of interviews. Speaking of music, one thing I wanted to mention, we didn't do any of this in the opening about a reference to the big show. Tony went out of his way to talk about the Grammys this past week, and mm-hmm. I love that, of course. Now, I did not watch. I can't watch. I could watch. I just, there's no point because I don't know anybody. But I would have this time, and he brought it up, and so I went and did the research, saw it. Someone actually posted it in one of the Tony Kornheiser groups, which was great. It is this duet between Tracy Chapman and, I guess, Luke Combs, I guess is his name.
Yeah.
And he's a country guy that redid the song. Now, I'm not going to lie. Even the performance on the Grammys, look, I adored, but I'm just not a fan of people redoing songs. I just never have been. It doesn't matter what it is. Right back to the rapper doing Hard Knock Life. But one of the main reasons is because the steel guitar that he uses in the number, I don't love. And that's a very country western flavor instrument is how I would say it, in my opinion. And I just don't love it. My dad loved the steel guitar. And it just gives you that country flavor, and I get it, and I love it in its place.
But that was the only thing about this duet that just didn't really do it for me. However, okay. It just brought back so many memories, Roxy. I mean, that album, Tracy Chapman's album, is just ridiculous. It's so good. And just seeing them do it on stage together, it, you know, it brought a tear. It did. And it just reminded me of how great that album was back. It was the 80s, 90s when it came out. I don't remember when it came out, but it's one of my all-time favorite albums, and I just love putting them back on. So it's a great reminder for that, and I'm glad that it got recognized the way it did. I just feel like it's a shame that someone has to remake a song to make it popular again. Does that make sense? Now, did you see this?
I saw a quick little snippet of it. And I love the song, and Tracy Chapman, yes, like amazing. Yeah. But yeah, I
for the listeners, I know you know it's called Fast Car.
Yeah, I think there's a place for these songs being re-released or re-recorded or revamped. But
I think he sounds great. I don't know Luke Combs that well. If that is who it is, right? I think that's who
I
it was.
So
I mean. Mm-hmm. He sounds fantastic. He's got a great voice. He's a great singer. All that stuff. I'm not knocking on him as an artist. I'm knocking on the idea, I guess, is what I'm saying. Because I'm like, write your own song. You know what I mean? But
yeah, I will say if all parties involved are good with it, like if Tracy Chapman was like, yeah, let's collab on this, then I guess we can't really say. We can have an opinion on it, but you know what I mean?
Well, like, as Tony always says, the answer to all your questions are money. Because I remember I was fortunate enough to be with Martin Sharnan when that song came out, Hard Knock Life, that remake. I feel bad. I always forget the rapper's name.
Is it Jay-Z?
Probably. It could be JQ. I don't know. But
I think it was Jay-Z.
And literally Martin said to us, he was out. We were on one of the tours that I did, and he literally came out, and he's, because we were like, what are you doing, man? And he was like, if you saw how many zeros were on that check, you would have done it too. And he's probably right. Mm-hmm. But it just, I don't know. It just, it's, yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
So, Roxy, real quick before we get to the emails, we have our calendar. We haven't really been using it because I haven't been there. We're not sure. This might be the last one because of all the technical problems we had today. We might just throw in the towel for the weekend. We'll come back out with you another episode next week. And so we'll be together again, hopefully. I mean,
yes.
I'm flying home Monday, so everything should go well.
Are.
But this calendar, you said it was interesting for today, and we've just have not been doing it, which is okay. We don't have to do it every episode. But what did you say it was?
Okay, so again, this is the Today I Learned calendar. So today I learned corn will always have an even number of rows on each cob. I didn't know that.
Okay, I'm calling bullshit on that.
I'm going to count. I'm going to go buy some corn.
I'm sorry,
corn
what?
And count.
That can't be true.
It might be.
I mean, it's also a strong statement. Will always. You know what I mean? Like,
true.
Call it 99% of the time just to cut yourself just in case, you know? But
or say most likely.
Most likely. That's a good word. Yes. But the funny thing is now the joke's on us because now I'm probably going to start counting every time I do an ear of corn. So they're saying, just to be clear, they're saying every ear. Every cob will have
an even number of rows.
How
but
on
is
earth
it going,
could they
is control it going,
that?
Is it going lengthwise? Is it going around?
I would think from the bottom up.
Like if you hold the corn upright.
Right. Yeah.
It'll go up like that. Or if you hold the corn sideways, like how you eat off
of
it.
Yeah, right. I don't know.
I need more details.
I think that's how they're going to get out of this is the loophole. Mm-hmm. They're going to be like, oh, well, we meant this.
You right. know,
like when people start writing and saying, well, I counted.
Yeah.
Well, also at the top of the ear, it's always a little questionable because that's usually where the corn starts going bad, if any, you know what I mean? And it also comes up to like a point.
Right.
So, I don't know.
And also sometimes if you're holding it sideways, there's one that's like in between two rows. Like
right.
it gets stuck somewhere in between. So where does that go? Like,
well,
what
I think
is
that's
that?
Their
is that
out
a row
too.
Itself?
Yeah, that's their out. Okay, yeah. Now it's starting to make sense. They're just, I don't know about this calendar. I don't know why I bought it. But it's kind of like the need to know facts. I mean, who knows where this information's coming from? You're just, you know, it's on the internet, so it must be true.
Right,
right,
right.
So I'm going old school. Well, it's in print. It must be real. So, yeah.
Sure.
All right, Roxy, why don't we get to some of the emails? Not saying I agree with it. Just throwing this out there now, okay?
Okay.
Dear Choxy, I am digging my theme music. Okay, no theme music this week. Sorry. Very relaxing. Completely opposite to my personality. Maybe it will calm me down, or maybe it will enrage me to lash out at coworkers. Chuck took a beating on multiple music fronts recently, and I will come to his defense since no one else is willing. Not even Roxy. I know, right? What's up?
Aww.
I asked 10 coworkers to name five, yes, five Talking Heads songs. Do you know how many people could name five? Zero. Zero. Three people got to three songs. One person couldn't name a single song. One person literally named songs by the Bee Gees. I asked people of all ages, shapes, and sizes. The kicker was, some guy challenged me to name five songs in 20 seconds, and I failed. I freaking buckled like the bow of the Titanic.
Oh, no.
I also researched that Eric Clapton quote on the all-knowing internet, and you know what? Clapton never said, I don't know, ask Prince. Never. He never said it. Clapton has spoken highly of Prince, but to be fair, said it might have been the drugs more than once when he was in awe of Prince's playing. Chuck has been vindicated. Eat it, people. Don't ever be podcast bullied again, Chuckles. Episode 178, ABTAHS. We will not do better the next time unless the Red Sox have a Wade Boggs day and Chuck finally forgives the bastard for riding around on a horse after winning the series while wearing the pinstripes. Okay, first of all, let's go back. I don't know that I've been vindicated because I don't know about this Eric Clapton thing. Wasn't that cleared up? I thought maybe it was someone else that said it. I don't remember. It wasn't Jimi Hendrix, right? But I think it was Eric Clapton, but I don't know. I don't know where I got that quote from. And somebody said it, so I'm like, oh, it must be true. But all right, you got the next one, right, Roxy?
I do. Dear Choxy, my issue with Johnny Damon was not that he went to the Yankees, but that he said he never would and then did it anyway. Pitchers and Catchers report February 14th, Rick 252 Franzosa, Cincinnati.
Yeah, people should never say they'll never do this or that.
Never say never.
Yeah, I never say never, especially in the in show business.
If I were playing for the Red Sox, I actually would never say that I would ever leave. But, you know, that's
well, but I'm just saying,
me.
If you need the money and the Yankees are going to pay you $1 bazillion, you're going to go to the Yankees. You're just going to do it.
I think I could still live a nice life playing for the Red Sox.
That's probably true. To people like us, yes. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Depends on your lifestyle, I guess. But,
sure.
All right. I'm going to cut this one down a little bit because it's some of it's personal. But it says, Chuck and Roxy, how are you doing? I was glad to hear that Roxy was able to meet up with Chuck in Milwaukee for Chuckfest, which he's laughing at. it just says, keep on potting and muchas gracias, episodio 187. How'd I do?
Ooh.
187. Cesar Amador, a good friend, Cesar. Now, he was also asking us, his family's coming. I don't think he's coming, but I think his wife and niece are coming to New York, and they wanted some advice on shows. Now, Roxy, I got an update on this, because the first thing I asked was, well, how old is your niece? She's 18, I think he said. So my first recommendation was, I think, you know, the new thing for the kids is it Anne, Juliet, and Six, right?
Yeah, right. Anne, Juliet is one, and then Six is the other.
Yeah. So that's what I kind of mentioned. I said, obviously, there's many other things. I even said, if you want to go old school, there's Little Shop of Horrors, which is probably easier to get a ticket to, and it's a much smaller theater, so you can get a better seat. Did I forget one?
I mean, I would say Moulin Rouge. You could throw that on there. Yeah, Derek Klena is back in, so he's exciting to see. I'm hoping to go see the show soon.
Right, absolutely. Now, I keep forgetting on top of that, you're right, because I forgot that they updated the music from the movie. See, I keep thinking, oh, that movie came out like in 2000, so this 18-year-old is not going to have any clue what this music is.
Right, they updated the music a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, so that's true. So Caesar, Moulin Rouge is another one possibility. I know there's others. I mean, and so like it also depends on if you want old school. I mean, obviously there's the standbys like Wicked and, you know, Lion King and all these shows that have been out
Aladdin.
Forever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Aladdin, of course. Yeah. Yeah. So it just depends on what you're looking for. So, all right, Roxy, what's the next one?
All right. For what it's worth, the Sky Bars were bought at Economy Candy in New York City, but not the main store. In February of 2023, they opened up a small second location in Chelsea Market, which happened to be across the hall from a restaurant a friend recommended I try. Eric Lonergan, episode 4.
Ooh.
So that's where the Sky Bars came from. So they're here.
They're in the city. Now, the Economy Candy, is that store that Ritz goes to all the time? It must be.
Ooh, good question.
I don't know. In the Village, or I want to say Lower East Side, sort of, there's this huge, and Tony's referenced it on the big show a couple times from other emailers, that it's got everything. And I've always wanted to go, but I'm every time I think about it, I'm like, well, the last thing I need right now when I'm trying to diet is candy, so let's not do that. But I think just to see the store would be kind of cool, too. But I was wondering, I bet you that's, like you said, it's a branch off of that, I'm guessing.
Maybe.
I could be wrong,
though.
I usually am, so who knows. Okay. And then this time we're going to end with this one. It's good to know some of the old standbys are back.
and they're still around. They still listen to us, even though they seems like they hate us sometimes. This one says, Chuck, thin crust Midwest junk? Fonz you. Oh, look at me. I live in New York City. I'm so effing special. Roop Sharma, episode 48.
Roop, you're killing me, Smalls.
Okay, well, no, I'm sorry. I guess it's, you know, that should be on our survey when we meet the Littles. It should be. Thin crust or real pizza?
That's
how
one.
I want to say it. Thin crust or real pizza?
Wait, I just love the Fonz you.
Right, exactly. Oh, well deserved. I mean, I did kind of so crap good. All over Midwest pizza. It was just okay. You know what downtown Milwaukee needs? They need, you know, Oz. Maybe you should branch off. Call it Oz the Great. I don't know, something. Oz is, I don't know, something. But they need a place where you can just go and get a slice of pizza. They don't have anything like that.
Yeah.
That I know of anywhere. Maybe by the basketball arena they do have something like that, but not in the area. I forget what it's called. The Fourth Ward, I think it's called, or something like that. Especially when you're going home at like 12 o'clock at night or on, you know, and maybe just on weekends. I don't know. Because I get that if it's not going to be profitable during the week like it would be in New York City, you're not going to do it. But I don't know. Even just on my way to work a couple times, like, oh, I just want a slice of pizza or two, you know, and that's it. That's all I want. I don't want the whole pizza. That pizza I got at the market, it was huge, you know, and I ate the whole freaking thing because that's how I am. I don't waste food. And I mean, it was tasty, but, you know, it was a little thin crust for me. But yeah, they need one of those just like New York style pizza places, you know, where you just get a slice, you fold it, the grease on it, you know, that kind of thing. You know?
I'll send a letter to the mayors of every city that you're going to be traveling to. And I'll say, hey, listen, Chuck is going to be here at this time. So you better open
a spot. In my defense, most of these cities already have these places. So that's why I'm thinking maybe by the arenas down in because that's like across the water.
Yeah, it's just not convenient for you.
Yeah. So anyway. Oh, well. Well, Roop, glad you're still around. Glad you're still listening. I appreciate it. You know, I do. Just like the Todd Decays, you know, when I make these comments about music groups that, anyway.
Sure.
Just glad you're all sticking around. We really appreciate it. Speaking of, Roxy, we have to get out of here. So tell everyone how they can get in touch with us.
You can go to our website, loyallittlespod.com. Everything you need is over there.
And don't forget, if you do listen to us on Apple and iTunes, you can give us a nice rate and review over there. It does help. We really appreciate it. And thank you once again, Glenn Pregetz, for coming on to meet the Littles. A good time as always. But we did want to say we're not sure what's going to happen this weekend. I'd like to say we'll have another episode because my schedule actually has calmed down a little. I do actually have some daytimes free. But with the technical stuff, it is closing weekend here. So we have some other events going on at the theater. We're not sure. But the good news is if we do wait till next Tuesday or whatever Tony's schedule allows, we will be together. So that'll be nice.
Thankfully.
So, and maybe we'll even have a third wheel on. Who knows?
Ooh.
So, that'll be fun again. I can't wait to get back to see everyone. That's going to be so much fun. So,
and me.
Well, of course, Roxy. But I did just see you last week. But no, of course.
Hey.
Of course. But in the meantime, Roxy, if they need a book, where can they go?
Go to aaronsbooks.com.
And make sure in the comment section during checkout, the most important thing is don't forget to
use the code, people.
Bye.
I'm going to Chuck Todd that mother.
Seem to have so much in common. As we came into each other's lives, tell surprise. Talking movies over curry and ramen. You're not the first one to arrive. I apologize. But the ones I ignore are like you from before. They don't ask where I am anymore. I'll abandon you like I always do. You'll never hear from me again. But for now, we're friends.
And we want to have it for our permanent record. What people are thinking. That's all. People are saying and thinking about
broadcasting.
No, this isn't broadcasting. It's recorded. Okay. Well, let's come on just a little bit closer. I mean, what was your first feeling when you heard this?
You're really such a happy guy. And you get to say I'm fat. You get tight. You even look me in the eye. That's such a fresh change of pace.
can't imagine that. You're so tall, and I'm fat, and you're smart, not as smart as is me. I'll probably bore of your talk. You are kind of okay, but I'll be going away because of my history item. Two friends away, son.
Expecting to die or something, and when you finally hear that he did die, you're shocked about it. I mean, that's the reaction I got to it.
And how do you feel about it now that we're in? I mean, what do you think?
Well, no doubt about it.
No doubt, huh?
Stronger.
What's that?
Nobody else is stronger.
You think we're really going to win?
Well, I know we beat the hell out of
time we've had together. Our rapport is in descent, genuine. I knew it wouldn't last forever. Perhaps you won't expect to relent, not exactly my intent, but I know from the past evidence it won't last. I won't push you away, it just works on its own. Then one day you will call, I won't answer at all. Message sent and received, wave goodbye. Having quite a penchant for severing time, enough to worry for avoidance here or now. Ask me for my promise and I'll give you wise. Mistaking you for someone who is easily bound. I'm obsessed with you. We'll have a month or two, and then you'll never see my face again. While abandoning you, like I always do, you'll never hear from me again. But for now, we're friends.
I will say, furthermore, to say I believe that it's a stab in the back. That's much as I have to say about it. The hate in my heart. What's in me, what's in my being? I'm gonna kill, slaughter, doesn't matter one. If I come across a wounded one, that wouldn't interest me. I'll kill my own father. Feel a part behind the top. You can just feel it.
This end.
The Loyal Littles Podcast is produced by the WTFC Podcast Network and edited by Louis B. Crocco. And the Loyal Littles Podcast logo is designed and drawn by Eric Lonergan.
Well, okay.
Oh, yeah.